Hey everyone, this is Jerry Jaffe, the world's most highly educated stand-up comedian and the comical heathen. Thank you so much for coming today's live stream. I've started doing these live streams as part of my podcast, which is called The Comical Heathen. I started the live streams last month with a theme, something that's been on my mind lately, and that is just the proliferation of conspiracy theories in the past few years. There's a lot of potential explanations, certainly the internet and social media, among other things. And then seeing it permeate our politics has really motivated me to at least say something. You know, I've found there's a common thing amongst some biologists or science professionals not to debate creationists because it just gives them a stage. So I don't really want to, debate anyone. I just want to put some clear information out there for people. I'll give you an example. Just this week, I have an article here in my hands. I'm in my safe bunker, many feet below the campus of Lake Erie College, where no one can get at me. And there's this week in the U.S. news, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. launched his presidential campaign as an independent. He seems to be like a darling of the right and goes on Fox a lot and et cetera, et cetera. Probably because he can, you know, try to attack Joe Biden. But I'm even less interested in that political element. What like gets my radar up is all of the conspiracy theories that RFK Jr. has espoused in different ways. I mean, he's a well-known, you know, anti-vaxxer, vaccine skeptic. You could find any number of articles. I like to go to Forbes sometimes because as a business magazine, they tend to like be a little bit conservative centrist. So they're not like a left or right news source, so to speak. And, you know, this is a list of many of his conspiracy theories. I'm not going to go into details. He has said at one time that COVID-19 targets certain races, that mass shootings are linked to prescription drugs, that the 2004 presidential election was stolen. He refutes the assassination stories of both JFK and his father. He's repeated the misinformation that gun ownership in Switzerland is similar to the United States. It's not, by the way. He's suggested that COVID-19 was genetically engineered, that Bill Gates exaggerated the pandemic to promote vaccines, and that vaccines can cause autism, and so forth. So he just has this like long list. And it's just, I don't really care about Robert F. Kennedy. I care about that he becomes like a megaphone for misinformation and conspiracy theories. I hope with me and today's guests, we can become candles. I don't know, in the wind, in a cave with wind, a windy cave. I don't know. But let's at least have some fun making fun of anti-science conspiracy theories. I'll say one last thing. This is part of a four-part series. This is part two. Last month, I did an episode, live stream with Ben Radford, great author and skeptic, on conspiracy theories in general. And that episode already exists. In the podcast version of this, I'll include a link to it for anyone who wants to follow up. Today, we're going to do anti-science conspiracy theories with two wonderful guests. In a moment, I'll bring on my co-host, science comedian and science communicator, Brian Mallow. And then shortly after, we'll bring on an actual biology professor from Lake Erie College. And I wanted to really include like an expert with a capital E. So we have somebody who can fact check us comedians in real time. Should we put our foots in our mouths? All right. So with no further delay, it'd be my pleasure to bring on our guest co-host, Brian Mallow.
Hello.
Brian, welcome to the stream. How the hell are you?
I'm great. I'm ready for a lively debate between three like-minded people.
People, yes. We will solve nothing during this conversation.
Do we ever?
I do want to say, I met Brian a few years ago. He was kindly on two earlier episodes of this podcast. And I originally interviewed him as a science educator for a book that I'm writing about religious satire. And that book is allied with this podcast. And that book is with Rutledge right now in production. So it will be coming
and
out.
Rutledge is a friend of yours?
Thank you. Rutledge is the name of a publisher. And based on the royalties I'm supposed to get, I don't think they're my friend at all. I feel like.
But maybe it'll sell.
Yes. So, of course, you're a comedian. But I know that in recent years, you've really taken off and had success as a science communicator. You go to the Lindau Nobel Laureate meeting every year for the past 7 or 8 years. You do communications and visit national labs and secret neutrino labs and things like that.
Those are all true statements.
How did you transition into becoming a science communicator?
You know, I did like science before comedy, or I don't know if that's fair to say, but it was more of a passion, and I considered becoming a scientist way before I was thinking comedy. But I did have early comedy influences like George Carlin and Steve Martin and Richard Pryor and the early Saturday Night Live and Monty Python and many others. But I was really influenced by science and science fiction. And people like Arthur C. Clarke and Isaac Asimov in particular. When I think about my sensibilities, comedic or otherwise, I think there's a lot of Carlin there, but I think the rational, clear thinking of Isaac Asimov, who wrote more, he's known as a science fiction writer, but he wrote so much nonfiction, and he wrote with personality and he wrote with humor. So what happened is a circuitous path, but once I became a comedian, it was, of course, science geeky, because that's just who I am. It took forever to come up with the phrase science comedian and realize it wasn't calculated. Science comedian, that describes what I do. And sciencecomedian.com was available, which I took to be either a really good sign or a really bad sign, like useless real estate. But once I had that phrase science comedian, like a dozen or so more years ago, the rest crystallized around it. Like, science comedian. And then people kind of approached me like there was an expectation that I was an educator. Oh, somebody once said, you teach kids about science using stand-up comedy. And I said, no, if you're a geek, I'll make you laugh. But the truth is, there's a bit of the teacher in me. And especially I like turning people on to books, music, film, and science ideas. When I learn something, it's like, wow, what a cool universe we live in. This is so cool. I know you think science is boring or not interesting, but let me just explain this little thing. And it's really cool.
Let me ask you this question, kind of germane to today's topic.
One more question. That's all I'm taking today.
Thank you. But please take 50 minutes to answer it then.
I usually do.
Yes, I noticed. When you go to these meetings, like the Lindau Nobel Laureates meetings and these laboratories, is the impact of anti-science or anti-science conspiracy theories discussed?
Well, you know, so most recently I was just at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab in California and also I was working with Stanford Linear Accelerator, two national labs. I was hosting a science slam, which was like a poetry slam, but picture 12 young scientists from four different Bay Area labs competing. They each have 3 minutes to present their science, one slide. Nice. To a general audience. And it was a competition and I was hosting. And, in some contexts, it's a popular subject among scientists to sometimes, especially in subjects like evolution or climate or vaccine related stuff. I think it is a popular topic, but sometimes you're there. Like I was there, I was getting tours of these amazing labs, the advanced light source, this synchrotron at Lawrence Berkeley lab. Well, you know, in some situations it doesn't come up because it's just so outside. It's absurd. It's like, no, we're just talking about the cool science, but it is a topic that I know all around the world, people and scientists mm-hmm. scientists also separate from people, scientists are concerned about it. That's a joke. As if they're not.
Well, it's a common, I mean, I don't know. Let's say stereotype that these science professionals don't value or learn to value communicating with the general public. And that could itself be at least one ingredient in this, stew of misinformation.
You know, and maybe we should wait till Zane is on, because there is some stuff I'd like to. We can hold this one, but it's the topic about communication failures during the pandemic and leading to, or related to vaccine hesitancy and stuff. And I know that's a good subject for him, so we can hold that. But you know what? I do think that See, I started being interested in science, physics and astronomy especially, from childhood. And I was learning extracurricularly. I was learning from Asimov and Clark
Sure.
and other science writers in addition to what I learned in school. And so much science conspiracy, I think, just comes down to when you hear the conspiracy theory on the surface, if you don't know any better, if you don't have the knowledge to contradict it, it can sound reasonable
Right.
and convincing. And somebody says it like it's, and this goes all the way to like moon landing hoaxes
Right.
of like someone goes, how come the way the flag was waving and there's no breeze? And you go, oh yeah, how come all the shadows are not parallel? If there's only one light source, the sun, all the shadows should be parallel unless it's
Wait a
studio
minute.
lighting with
Wait a
many.
minute.
So
I think you've
these are,
convinced me,
yeah,
Brian. It is
or
a hoax.
one of the big ones, and one of the ones it's like, oh, I can answer this. So I didn't know the answers to those others. And they're like, okay, those are intriguing, intriguing. But here's one that was super easy for my knowledge set.
Okay,
It
let's
was
hear it.
this one that in all these photos on the surface of the moon, you can't see the stars in the picture. How come you can't see the stars? And it's like everyone who has any experience with photography knows this one. It's the contrast range. If you expose for the bright, bright surface, you have to shut the lens down. It's so bright and you won't see the dim stars. If you expose for the stars, then the surface will be blown out. And we all deal with this all the time. And and so you go, oh, that sounded convincing until you knew that. Oh, when somebody points out when you stick the flag in the ground, it's vibrating and there's nothing to stop the vibration. So that waving wasn't the wind. Or if you read a long time ago, I think it was Phil Plait, the bad astronomer, who first, I believe, got notoriety for a really thorough debunking of moon hoax stuff. And one of the things was, it's like, guess what? Look outside on the Earth with one light source. Shadows aren't all parallel because of the topography. So shadows don't always have to be parallel. So it's like these things sound, and so then you can stretch that to, vaccine stuff or any subject. When you first hear it, you go, huh, because, but I have this awareness that, oh, I'm very skeptical about that, but I need to find an expert to tell me the answer. Like, what am I not getting? What's the flaw in that thing I just heard?
In a logic class, we would probably put that under the logical fallacy of argument from ignorance. And the word ignorant here is not being derogatory, like you're an ignoramus. It's like the literal meaning of you don't know the facts of the thing that's being discussed. So therefore, you don't have the critical tools to evaluate the likelihood of the thing being discussed.
Yeah, I've heard Neil Tyson talk about this on YouTube on video a lot,
He
like
got that off
saying
me.
that
I said it first.
did he like about UFOs? Like, it's like we don't know what it is, so it's probably from outer space. That's like saying, I don't know what it is, so I think I know what it is.
That's why I changed. I have We don't say UFOs anymore on this show,
Right.
Brian.
What do
We
we
say
say?
unidentified, what the fuck is that objects?
That's what they are. So
I think.
that's UWTF.
Yes.
And I
Oh.
do like what Regina said. Asimov was totally my gate. I feel like science fiction was my gateway drug. Like before science, you get it cut with a little fiction, a little watered down. And then pretty soon you just need the pure stuff. Get rid of the fiction, go right for the science.
Well, as comedian,
Comicalheathen.com is a great place for more resources like this.
yes, and in fact, it has all of our past episodes archived in one place for free, including Brian's two previous appearances, which I will include in a
Unfortunately,
link to the
yes.
podcast episode of this live cast.
So you can avoid. Here's a URL you should always avoid. Warning.
Hey, I'm going to bring on our guest expert because I have a
Oh.
question I've been dying to ask him all morning. And then
Excellent.
whatever I have topics in mind, but also whatever you two have in mind, this is just three friends talking about anti-science conspiracy theories. So whatever comes up, my friends.
I've got
He is
some.
a full professor of biology at Lake Erie College, which is somewhere in the eastern Siberias of Cleveland. Please welcome to the stream, Dr. Zane Johnson.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. It's good
Thank
to
you,
be
Zane, and thanks for agreeing to do this.
here. And thank you for the promotion. I'm actually associate professor.
Oh my goodness.
I was wondering if you were like a half professor, three quarter crescent professor. What are you?
Well, that it shows my level of respect for you that I think of you as such, and we'll make it so as soon as it's bureaucratically possible. I also add that I used to do a trivia podcast called the
Gold Star Classroom.
Thank you. Brain fart alert. Gold Star Classroom, which Dr. Johnson was once on. And we have like 50 or 60 old episodes that are still out there. And that episode's top five. Like if you've never listened to that episode of that old podcast. And by the way, that old podcast had hundreds of thousands of viewers, not just dozens. So it had a little blip back in the past. So check that out if you're a Dr. Zane Johnson fan. Zane, I woke up this morning wanting to ask you at least one biology-related question,
okay,
and then we'll go from there.
No,
I woke up this morning, my knee was really stiff. What conspiracy theory is that?
Were you recently vaccinated?
So you know what conspiracy theory? They're putting something in the drinking water that people to require anti-arthritic drugs.
Yes. Maybe it has to do with that eclipse that happened yesterday.
Yeah, it must be it can't be getting old. I refuse to believe that. So that's why
were you vaccinated recently? Done.
Boom. Vaccinated yesterday. Hell yeah. So, speaking of vaccinations, my friends, it is a topic well worth discussing because there continues to be a pretty strong, if you put it kindly, you say vaccine skeptic. Vaccine hesitancy is another kind way to put it, but it's the vast majority of the comments you hear under those umbrellas have a anti-science agenda to them. Dr. Johnson, what's your current impression of the state of affairs when it comes to anti-vaxxers?
It's as complex of a movement as it is a puzzling one. It is not actually a new thing. You can actually find anti-vaxxer movements going back to the late 1800s and early 1900s, but the current one we would largely consider to kind of emerge more or less in the 90s. And a lot of that occurred when a key paper published in the British journal, The Lancet, by Andrew Wakefield, was retracted by The Lancet. And this was that article that was kind of that first purportedly scientific evidence of a vaccine autism link. And from there, it's grown more widespread that vaccines in general are harmful for a variety of reasons. So like many anti-science conspiracies, it persists in the light of overwhelming refuting data to those perspectives.
What do you say? I mean, as teachers, we engage with young adults every day, and so you can get a range of opinions. Your upper level classes are presumably biology or science majors that might affect the cohort. Do you encounter students who have like interest in or confusion about vaccines or anti-vaxxers?
Of course. The range of courses I teach, I don't get a lot of questions or discussion about that, but some of my colleagues here in the science building do field a lot more of that. So by and large, I think that the majority of our science students don't hold anti-vaxxer perspective. Mm-hmm. I think they're probably fairly in line with what the scientific evidence has to say. Of course, we probably can't know that fully because the ones that might be anti-vaxxers aren't likely going to come out in front of their
professors
and say so.
That's what I was wondering if they, apparently it's not common for you, but if you know, my daughter's doing her PhD in biology at the University of Toledo. So she teaches some labs and undergraduate classes, and she will get students who express skepticism. I would say the most common topic she's reported to me is skepticism about climate change. Hmm. Do you encounter that in your classrooms or in your everyday life?
So I teach mostly science classes. I do occasionally do general education type courses. And it's in those kinds of courses we tend to get more students who are climate change deniers. Or I had a student turn in a paper, you know, where he was, you know, thought he had good evidence that, that vaccines cause autism. And he didn't actually have any sources cited in his paper for it. So I asked him to reveal his sources. He assured me he had some, but then produced such sources.
Well, what do you make of the, you know, and Brian and I were chatting a moment ago, the logical fallacy of argument from ignorance comes up. And it's understandable because, like, in the moment, you don't have a lot of information in front of you. And each person, just being a normal human being in a non-judgmental way, just knows what they know or knows what they think they know. And what else can they use as a filter to interpret what's going on around them? Do you have either a strategy or a common reply when someone would challenge, you know, the some kind of science notion like, well, you can't prove that. Like, sitting here right now, you can't prove men were on the moon. Or sitting here right now, you can't prove that
you weren't there. Worked. You don't know what that there were dinosaurs. You
is there a good logical or scientific answer to that kind of you know, debate?
I can begin with pointing out that, by and large, no credible scientist claims to prove anything. What we in fact talk about is that we devise hypotheses which we test in various ways, either through experiments or with observational evidence, and we tentatively support hypotheses when the data warrants it, with it in mind that any hypothesis in the future will be subject to modification or possibly refutation. So I try to, you know, now that may come off as weasel words, but you know, when it is something like vaccinations and the claims made, you know, that one commonly made claim is that vaccines weaken the immune system. And this, of course, has been refuted many times. And in fact, what vaccines do is bolster the immune system in preparation that if it encounters something much, much worse, it is ready. There's even some data that in groups of people that, there's groups of people that have been around long enough that have refused the MMR vaccine for. So now we have people in adulthood that were never vaccinated against measles, mumps, rubella, and there's some preliminary data that suggests that they are in fact more susceptible to other things as opposed to less susceptible. With regard to climate change, it's even more of a quagmire because in industry, opponents of climate change essentially have their own armies of scientists that are attempting to present their own evidence, their own data, just as the tobacco industry did for many years with their army of scientists trying to, I think there was a book called Merchants of Doubt, you know, just trying to muddy the waters, a typical industry tactic.
Again, it might be PR, but I've heard in the last couple of years, anyway, that the large petrochemical companies in their internal workings have started to account for climate change because they can't do their business if they don't.
Yes.
Like, so even if they have their army of doubters muddying the water in Washington, they're actually changing their own behavior as a company.
Yeah, the insurance agency is taking climate change very seriously.
As is the Pentagon, actually.
You know, one of the great things, like in hearing all this, one of the things I wanted to have Zane here for was, you know, I like bringing it back to the communication issues.
Sure.
Like, for instance, the story, fraudulent though it was, that vaccines cause autism, the Wakefield paper, wow, what a compelling story. That lit the world on fire. It went around the world. Oh, my God, vaccines cause autism. The counter story, which was just, hey, no, they don't, wasn't a very compelling story and didn't do a great job of combating it, even for decades of going, no, please, they really don't. And in the COVID era, I think one of the real communication failures that I haven't even heard mentioned, forget the mask stuff and our doing the best with the knowledge we had at the time. But one of the things we didn't really do very well was, you know, there's this idea of the experimental mRNA, you know, DNA editing, what do they call it? Gene therapy. What we didn't really convey very well was exactly how much what the extent of the trials compared to previous vaccine. I consume science media more than most other media, and I didn't see this. So the general public, I don't think they were informed well about, hey, here's the trials they went through, and here's what any vaccine goes through. And now, 3 years later, how far we are in. And it's just like, that's a basic thing that maybe we should have communicated a little better. No, it's not that. The technology's 20 years old. We've heard that. But we didn't really hear good info on just how thoroughly they were tested. And I was like, that's a communication failure that we didn't reach people with.
We have another question from a listener, right, directly germane to what we're talking about. If either of you want to jump on this. But let me just add, as a child of the 70s, I remember just being alive and there being apparently scientists willing to go before Congress to assure us that cigarettes did not cause cancer. And I don't see many scientists or meteorologists in 2023 going on TV to argue against climate change, but that definitely used to be a thing in the 90s and the aughts.
Yeah. What example do you have? Some examples in mind for this question? Like,
well, I think a moment ago,
we don't hear it much for evolution, and we don't hear it much for, but we have heard it for ivermectin a little bit.
Yeah.
For ivermectin or. And it's like, who do you trust as an expert?
Well, I think Zane alluded to the, you know, petrochemical companies having their own scientists muddying the water.
Right.
So I brought up, which is a historic reference. But do you have do you have any suggestions or advice, either Zane or Brian?
We all have to find our trusted sources. It's hard to understand when you feel like, hey, I'm trusting what I'm getting from the scientific community. And maybe sometimes people think they're trusted source. It's like, yeah, how do they know what's a trusted source? If it's politicians,
right,
like Kennedy, RFK, right, then it's like, are you going to listen to him over all these scientists? But
some people will.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
go ahead, Zane.
More broadly, Brian brings up the point: who do you trust for your information? There, you know, of course, there are many who, you know, they defer to celebrities,
mm-hmm,
who have no expertise in any of these
yes,
things. And also, even more popularly, when business people, the upper echelons of the business world, the Elon Musks and such speak.
Right.
And to give a lot of credence to what they say without considering, is this person really someone who is qualified to talk about,
mm-hmm,
medical issues or climate change in any way? I just read recently an article on AP Press. A month ago, a former Silicon Valley executive named Steve Kirsch went before the Pennsylvania State Senate to talk about his anti-vaccination perspective and use as his example the Amish, making claims that there's no autism among Amish children, that the Amish are not prone to the same kinds of chronic diseases that the rest of us get, and he attributes to the fact that they do not have their children vaccinated. I started digging around a little bit. Getting good data on vaccination rates in the Amish communities is really, it's sporadic and apparently very variable, but many Amish communities do have their children vaccinated against some things. Kirsch also claimed that the way RFK Jr. did, that the Amish were immune to COVID. And so one of the problems is that we have people who are in high regard, whether they're politicians, businessmen, celebrities,
podcasters,
give you know, they're the things that they say are viewed as credible, whether or not correct. And certainly there's the problem. They have no expertise in any of these areas.
Yeah. In our logic and philosophy classes, we call that one the argument from authority, where we trust authority figures, but
and I mean,
just because they're authorities or
podcasters. Elon Musk is a challenging one because in a lot of people's eyes, whether he's a doctor or not, he's the smartest guy in the world. He's done. Yeah. And then Joe Rogan is also put up on a pedestal with his podcasting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And not, I don't want to pile on Trump. That would be a separate episode. Anti-science conspiracy theories. But I just, it's not a partisan thing. Other presidents from either party would not have said the things he said about COVID that were like medically, scientifically incorrect on a hot microphone. But he's an authority figure to some people. And there was, in the months after he suggested drinking bleach, which he did, people look it up on the video. That's the first thing, is maggers don't believe he said that. It's on video. You can see it for yourself. And the months after that, there was a spike in calls to poison control hotlines.
Oh, my.
Now, that correlation is not causation, but there was definitely a spike.
A correlation. Yes. There's a fine line. You just gave me an idea for a line, as you called him an authority figure to some. There's a fine line between authority and authoritarian.
Yes.
You know, the great thing about these kinds of conspiracies, like, is that there are so many.
Yes.
You can choose any or all of them. Like Trump, is he the guy that got the vaccine going, or is he back? It was nothing. He's played both sides of it. It was nothing, and also he's responsible for the development of the vaccines.
Well, yes, which he was booed at one of his own.
Yeah, yes.
But what do you do when people are saying it's a bioweapon designed by the China, a horrible bioweapon designed by to target, I guess, non-Jews and Chinese, apparently, to target people and black people specifically. They always rely on technology we don't have but wish we did.
Yeah.
But so it's either this horrible targeted bioweapon, or it's really just the cold. It's nothing. It's nothing. And it's the vaccine. So it's like,
what evidence,
or it's a horrible bioweapon.
What evidence would we need to confirm the hypothesis that Jewish people have a laser in space? And that's what's causing the wildfires in California.
Oh, my. Hey, well,
go ahead, Jane.
I'm going to build on that, because what Brian was talking about reminds me that for those who embrace conspiracy theories, the difficulty in, if you were actually to attempt to convince them otherwise, the problem is that the attempt to present data that refutes their conspiracy theory versus trying to present that, well, the claim that you're making, there is in fact no evidence with they view both the evidence that's being presented against it and the absence of evidence as both being support for their view. And that puts not just scientists, but anyone who is trying to convince people otherwise that hold ridiculous ideas, how difficult it is to change their minds on those things. Now, earlier there was a question across the bottom of the screen. Many scientists do not communicate science well to the public. Some are great at it. I'm a fan of Neil deGrasse Tyson. Isaac Asimov was excellent at it. By and large, scientists do not do it well. When we also have the confounding political perspectives that people have, many from the right and the extreme right view science and scientists as liberal and elite, and that's part of what they decry. So scientists testifying before Congress or in a more open venue are generally distrusted, because they're perceived as being part of a liberal left that's eroding the nation's morals and values. If that helps any.
Brian.
Yeah. Before we leave that, I just want to say, so making it clear, like the guy that was being referenced, like the public making sense of scientists giving truth to conspiracy theories from A. Darling, Robert Malone, who is he's a legitimate scientist who made, like many other scientists, some small contribution to the development of mRNA technology. And then flash forward 20 years and he's going on Rogan and claiming to be the inventor of mRNA technology. And here's his now very anti-science. But how is the public supposed to know that, oh, he might have been a respectable scientist, but now we don't think he is? Like, how are they supposed to make sense of that? I don't know. How do I know that, though? I'm the general public, and yet I know this.
Well, I'm going to go around and ask each of you a question, but I'm going to start with a quick example of my own. Although I do teach some intro to philosophy and logic classes, my area of expertise with a capital E is theater, but my PhD is in. And there is, not a science conspiracy theory, but a conspiracy theory in the shadows of theater studies of whether or not Shakespeare wrote Shakespeare.
Right.
And I remember a number of years ago, I mean, this might be in the 90s even, coming across an article about an astronomer who was a professor in Arizona somewhere. And he was like, in the world of astronomy, he was a respected scientist. But he had noted that something in one of Shakespeare's plays referred to something about a constellation that he claimed Shakespeare could not have known. And based on this one, let's just call it data point, he had become like an anti-Shakespeare person.
Maybe something that Sir Francis Bacon might have known.
Yeah, that someone in like the court would have known. Someone who was of the Enlightenment would have known. And on the one hand, it's very common in conspiracy theories to find non-experts weighing in on things. So this person is not an expert in theater studies, Shakespeare studies, English literature. Yay, though he may be a legitimate expert in academic astronomy. And also, he just had that one data point.
Couldn't someone have told maybe Shakespeare wouldn't have known that unless someone who might have known it told him.
Yeah, Shakespeare was what we would have called a courtesan, as in he was welcome in the court as an artist and performed there many times. One glass of wine with the right person would have settled this whole controversy. But I wonder, I tell that mildly amusing example, so I can ask each of you, just do you have a anti-science conspiracy theory, which is like a pet peeve or a favorite to talk about that you'd like to just share for a couple of minutes? Brian.
Yes. I don't know if I have just one, but
Oh, wait.
I'm
going to interrupt you.
Yeah.
Just to ask another quick question. Do you consider product placement to be a conspiracy theory of any kind?
Not when it's a noble organization like the Comical Heathen.
So we do have new coffee mugs out for the podcast.
Nice.
Black and white. Available at our new merch shop.
I'm convinced I want one.
Okay, well, there's the link right there.
Okay,
that's where you order one.
Let me dispense with one in a second. Chemtrails, they're poisoning us. Maybe it's heavy metals. My favorite thing about that is, okay, so it's horrible chemtrails that's poisoning us. And the people behind this conspiracy, they are earthlings who live on Earth and are breathing the same poisonous air. Okay, explain that one to me. I'm sure that they've had a shot, a vaccination that's good, that protects them. They have the antidote. Maybe that's the obvious answer to that. But it's just so absurd. Oh, they're poisoning us, but they're earthlings, right? They live here. Okay. But I think anything related to flat Earth, and because flat Earth brings a bunch of stuff. For there's many flavors, just like the COVID. Mm-hmm. But for some, what does it mean? Does it mean that we live on a constructed world? And some of them means that the entire space program is fake. And when you start saying that, there are so many problems with that, because you think a simple-minded view is NASA's lying to us. Wait a second. It's not just NASA. You know how many countries have space programs? Do you know how many countries have private companies in the satellite business and space business. And it's like you're talking about everyone being involved, millions of people to perpetrate this hoax, yes, when the science and the engineering to do things like go to the moon,
right,
has been known for hundreds of years. The basic physics, yep, of how you could get there with chemical rockets has been known for way before we had the technology. And so anything to do with those, I think, it's like one of the problems with conspiracies is that they don't understand when you call into like young earth creationism or this moon, it's like the flat earth, any of these things. It's like, you don't understand. We have a model of the world that supports it in unbelievable different ways. Like the age of the earth, there's so many ways to determine it, from climate, from ground, from comparative anatomy and and flat earth. It's like we could predict when a solar eclipse would be, exactly what it would look like, how long it would last, where you have to be to view it, and a million other things like that, using a model of the world that never fails to get things where they need to go. And one of a version that's bothered me as I was referencing this to you before we did the show is, have you ever seen any of these amazing, I should have had one to pull up, images of SpaceX rockets, like where sometimes like from behind, where they make these amazing weird patterns in the sky, like the trails can be spectacular, like voluminous or like lines radiating out, and they don't look like anything you've ever seen before. So I saw people, you know, they're like UFO. It's like, everyone's like, no, that is this SpaceX rocket that launched. I'm telling you that what it is. And I saw this one there, and I wanted to go watch the Space Shuttle Challenger explosion again a while back. And I pull up a video on YouTube and I look in the comments, and I've seen this said about the other one, but here was about the Challenger. And it was a denier saying, you know, it's fake because the space shuttle was going up and then it curved sideways. And that's what that SpaceX one can't be a SpaceX rocket because it was going sideways. And the funny thing is, when it's like what you're saying totally supports, you don't understand the physics of it. Like they think that the way we go up into orbit is going straight up. That's not at all
how right.
And it's why we launched from Florida as close in the United States to the equator because we're making use of physics. They go up and then they immediately turn sideways. The way you get to orbit is by increasing your lateral speed because you're always falling back. And that's what an orbit is. If you went straight up, when you turn your rockets off, you'd fall straight down. But you go sideways until you hit a speed where even though you're falling, that's free fall, you don't hit. So it's kind of funny when someone comes in, it's like the combination of ignorance and arrogance where it's like, it can't be right because it's going sideways. And it's like, well, you don't understand. That's how
I'm
going
to ask you, Zane, in 5 seconds, but I do want to add just to piggyback a detail. When you refer to for flat earthers, like the large number of people who'd have to be involved, every airplane pilot, every government, every military officer, and so on. And it always brings to mind when talking about conspiracy theories, an apocryphal mafia saying, three people can keep a secret if two of them are dead. So I don't know how 10,000 people or 1 million people are going to keep the secret of the earth being flat.
But here's the thing. You could argue, playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
It's like, well, it's not a secret. It's out. We've all heard it. It's not a secret.
Yes.
So it wasn't kept. Nah.
You get that with the UFO people when they'll say, well, there's the evidence. There's the body. There's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That new body, the Mexico bodies. It's like they're talking about DNA. By all means, why don't shut up and show us the DNA evidence?
Yes.
Because either there is DNA or there isn't, and either it looks something like ours or it doesn't.
Yeah, it's totally those aliens. Ben and I talked about them on the last episode. They're total like P.T. Barnum show-offs. They're not letting anyone actually study them.
Just show
and
us the
human
evidence.
Remains have been found in that condition before, by the way. So everything about those unusual remains are consistent with human remains under certain circumstances. Zane, do you have a sort of a favorite conspiracy theory to, you know, debunk or share, or that bugs you?
Well, there are a lot that that come to mind. As a biologist, certainly evolution denialism is one. I don't really want to wade into that one. That's that's a big complex topic. I think I'm also going to go with the flat Earth thing, because there's a lot of weird things to the flat Earth movement. Aside from the fact that you know, I can see how the biological and the geophysical and geochemical evidence to support evolution is above the heads of a great number of people. And in particular, if they're coming at it from the perspective of, you know, this is in contradiction to scripture, they're not even going to be open to listen to it. But with you know, the fact that our planet is, you know, classified as an oblate spheroid is what basically spherical, not perfectly so, that there are so many simple ways without even having to go into space to look at it from a different perspective. There are so many simple ways right here on the planet to demonstrate this that so many people still reject those relatively simple experiments. And of course, there were ancient Greeks who collected, you know, like Aristotle, that collected the first empirical evidence of a spherical Earth. I think with flat Earth things, there's kind of a cultural campiness to it. It's almost like it's fashionable to be a flat Earth advocate. We went through a little phase here on campus. I don't know professional sports.
I know where this is going.
Basketball player. I don't know his name.
Clint, I know who you mean.
who was it?
Kyrie Irving was the one who.
So of course, you know, professional athlete, you know, basketball player, you know, the Earth is flat. So for a while, we had a problem on campus with a few members of the men's basketball team. You know, of course, you know, hero worship. You know, Kyrie Irving says the Earth is flat, so it must be flat. The heck with what the science professors say. The response of a great many of young women on the women's basketball team was, "You guys are idiots." So I think they're, you know, but believing in a flat Earth is relatively benign. You know, being an anti-vaxxer and the size of the anti-vaxxer movement, this is a public health risk. Mm-hmm. This is something that we really need to be concerned about. You know, guys who think the Earth is flat are not going to put society at risk with a flat Earth belief. But if you know, the large numbers of people that will not vaccinate their children because they believe that vaccines are harmful, this poses a public health risk. Then, of course, when governments mandate vaccination, we get into political issues, you know, how dare you tell us what to do kinds of things. And there's another aspect of it.
I agree with you, but I do think that they are like, you're right, which is the biggest concern, but this uncritical thinking and some Republican, a woman, I forget what she is, like a governor or something in recent months, went off about globalists and like espoused a little flat Earth thing and said a thing about, if like, why do they have to show us globe so often if it's real? Like, why globe if it's real? Well, how do you even start to answer?
Right.
So that's someone who could get in office. But yeah, that same, if we could teach critical thinking skills. And like you were saying, one of the simplest ways is you can watch the way a boat.
Right. Slowly
like goes
disappears
over the curve of the Earth, and it's simple, you know, explanation.
Do you know all the people who go to Disney World every year and Universal? There would be a Disney World at the edge of the Earth, and it would be the number one tourist site.
How about if the there fact wasn't that the edge of the Earth in all recorded history? No evidence of the edge of the... Excuse me? How big is this flat?
Where? I have seen ancient maps with dragons on them. So
I stand corrected.
Now, that's cryptozoology, not flat earthers, but still.
Still, where would you have these cryptozoological creatures but on a flat earth, hidden inside at the north, you know, behind the ice wall?
Well, we've segued into our last 5 minutes. On the one hand, of course, thanking both of you for spending time with an idiot like me. But is there anything else that, you know, you had in your notes that you wanted to share? Just thoughts, comments, witticisms, suggestions? Well, I'll ask Brian first and Zane second. Anything else, Brian? Pre-show you mentioned the shuttle thing.
Yeah. Well, that, like I said, it's like sometimes... there's the educator in me wanting to explain this thing about no. If it's that, you know, it's the Dunning-Kruger thing. It's unbelievable. I spoke to high school students once at a very large, nice school in Houston. And one of them asked me if the earth was flat. And I said, well, in some places. But then the thing is, he was convinced, and we talked afterwards. And I actually put it, so you think... you are in high school. You know you don't know much science. You know you haven't even taken these classes yet. You watch some YouTubers and you think you know more than Einstein, Hawking, Newton. Come on. You think you have a better cosmological comprehension than those guys. You don't. It's like, but how anyone can think that is unbelievable. And just the one other thing about the vastness of the conspiracy is the thing about the science and like the math to get to the moon. Anyone can learn it and reproduce it. So not only people that I learned this stuff in high school in 12th grade, it's like, it's not indoctrination, like to learn the, into like, because you can disprove it yourself. Here's one. Yeah. Here's my final parting shot. It's that people don't understand how science works. If science is always trying to disprove a hypothesis. If a scientist could disprove evolution by natural selection, if a scientist could disprove, you know, the 13.7 billion year Earth, you know, universe vision, or any of those things, they would. And if Russia, there's no way Russia would have let us win the moon landing because we beat them. They wouldn't have let us get away with it. There's just absurdities like that. But just this very fact that, what was I saying right before?
Well, there may be things which are too, like that Dr. Johnson alluded to, that are, science can get complex. So the average citizen on the earth, it's not even fair to expect them to like know the intricacies of science X, Y, or Z. However,
maybe that's something we need to teach is like,
yes,
if you understand
what I wanted
how science
to say
works,
is,
they're all trying to, it would be Nobel Prizes. People are trying to disprove that stuff.
But most scientific confusions that you actually encounter, citizen scientists could investigate. So I remember, I have 7 brothers and sisters, so I can say this without shaming any one of them. One of my siblings once said to me in an anti-evolutionary flare, what about the eye? And that's a common thing. How's an eye going to evolve? And rather than sort of lecture him or her, I said, that's actually an interesting question. Many scientists have studied it. You should look into it and see what you can find out. So, I mean, there is stuff there that most people, if they took the step, could find out more.
And in some cases, even do their own experiment. And the key to that is it didn't spring up overnight. It very gradually evolved.
This is something I cover in my evolutionary biology class. How did the eye evolve? And all the things that were with that.
How about you, Zane? What's your last thoughts on this whole topic?
My last thoughts. Well, the internet, although it can be a powerful tool, unfortunately has led to millions and millions of people thinking that they are now experts on everything. And there is also confusion. There is a book called The Death of Expertise. I don't remember the name of the author, in the minds of a great number of people, including political extremists at both ends of the spectrum. They often confuse expertise, that which people gain through years of study and hard work, with authoritarianism. So they view the scientific community as authoritarian, not as a body of people who have painstakingly amassed expertise in in particular fields. So Tom Nichols, somebody just that just came up. Yes, that's and the fact that so many people defer to very visible public figures, celebrities. Mm. I refer to the Jenny McCarthyism.
Mm.
So, yeah. Wonder how many people think that vaccines cause autism because Jenny McCarthy said so.
Well, she got her PhD from Google. That's a well-established university, isn't it? The Harvard of the internet. Yeah. Hey, I want to let people know as we wrap up that this, of course, is a live stream, and I thank everyone who's dipped in and spent some time with us. In the near future, it'll be just given a quick edit to smooth out the rough edges of me saying too many times. I will add in some theme music. So I'm about to say some thank yous, and I'll begin with my theme music is Mark Bell playing on the beautiful Skinner organ, some Bach music, which my friend Jeff Gettert then produced and remastered. So thank you, Mark and Jeff, for our wonderful theme music that you at the live stream cannot hear, but anyone in the future listening to the podcast will. I want to thank science comedian and science communicator Brian Mallow and associate professor of biology, Dr. Zane Johnson. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening. And as I always say, let me close on this thought. It's our motto and mantra here at the Comical Heathen. It may be your dogma, but it's my karma. And I'm all about spreading the love. Thank you.